Hi, Matthew. Welcome to episode 110 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, aka MTB, PhD, founder and creator of the world's first brake sensor and software combo for analyzing your braking out on the trails, BrakeAce. Today, we're talking about a topic that we haven't touched on before.
Drugs.
Doping.
Drugs. Dude. So the reason we're talking about this one is because you sent me this article about the Kenyans, and there's something happening there. But like, how did we not cover doping before?
Do you know? So do you know why I've stayed away from it? Because it's such a, I don't want to say gray area, but I feel like you have to be really in the know of what as a biochemist, I feel like I really should know the whole metabolic pathways of how these drugs interact or may not enhance performance. And so I just get too down in the weeds. And before I know it, I'm like 5 hours into finding out why nandrolone was initially used as a fertility drug in females to help embryoidic.
Yeah, but nobody cares about
formation.
The mechanics of it.
I know.
Like, what does it do?
And so then I'm like, oh, this is too much. I can't even. But now, Matt, I was like, this Kenyan thing, how are we still in 2023 now having a doping issue? So I want to look into the wider context of what has happened in the Kenyan doping scandal crisis and kind of crux that as the backbone of our discussion with some, you know, our style of sports science and inside of that.
Yeah, cool. You know, I was thinking about doping, and I take this approach where
you should reframe that sentence.
Yeah. I was thinking about people who doper. I don't know how do I say this. You know, I was thinking. I wonder if we're gonna like shoot ourselves in the foot here. Be like, oh, Matt and Will promoted doping on their podcast.
They really knew what they were talking about.
I gotta say, like, I don't know. It's always interested me. First off, I'm scared of needles, so like, it's not gonna
you
happen.
You are, yeah. Right? I was only allowing finger prick stuff when we did our research. You had to have an exclusion from the actual blood drawing stuff.
Yeah, I just faint. I like can't control it. I haven't fainted in a while, actually. Been many years, but you know, it happens when I see like lots of my own blood. But anyway, it has always interested me, and obviously there's that doco Icarus, I think it's called, on Netflix. Yeah. Where they like go pretty in depth of like what happens to this guy when he dopes and he goes on this doping protocol, and he becomes a machine.
He's still he did worse, right, in the same race.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of those people he was racing against were also dopers. But it's always interested me. But it goes back, because this is also something that we haven't talked about, ergogenic aids, right? Like, well, what are the things that I can put into my body that are going to help me perform? Well, one thing I can do, like the tiniest ergogenic aid that I can have that's going to help me perform is water. If I drink water during training or during an event, it is better than not drinking water. And suddenly I perform better for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. The next one, caffeine, which is a drug. Right?
Well, before that would be carbohydrates.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So carbohydrates, you'll definitely perform better if you ingest carbohydrates during intense exercise than if you didn't. Okay. There's an ergogenic aid. Is it cheating? No, right? It's caffeine. Is it cheating? It potentially helps. Is it cheating? No, it's not cheating. I think there's like a limit though of the amount of caffeine that you can have. I don't remember what it is. I could ask ChatGPT.
Crazy. Yeah.
But then like you get to things like supplements. And for some reason, I'm like just drawing a blank on all the supplements that we did. But when I was teaching sports nutrition, we did like this test on all these different ergogenic aids. And one of the things I used to do with athletes,
like bicarbonate,
beta-alanine, those things.
Yeah.
Like, is that cheating? No, it's not. But why not? It's a compound that you're ingesting in your body to improve your performance. And then we got like crazy ones that are clearly illegal that are cheating.
EPO.
Yep, EPO. Which, if you're not in a sporting context, that it like helps you survive. Right? If you're getting chemotherapy, it you need it to survive. Like, I mean, that's what it's for.
Yeah.
But then in a race, suddenly it's cheating. So I always found it quite interesting, like this gray area that exists, like which things are cheating and which things aren't, because eventually there may be a ruling that says this thing that used to be cheating, oh well, now it's not cheating anymore. Like, you can have that. That's all good.
Or vice versa has happened as well.
Yeah.
And you know, Matt, this is something that Emma and I, my wife, who we did our PhD with, had a moral dilemma about.
What were you doing to cheat? What was she doing to cheat?
She wasn't. No. So specifically, you know, she had her keratin supplement that she was testing.
Bird feathers.
Yep. And then she was testing polyphenols along with nitrites. So polyphenols you can get more predominantly from pomegranates. And so she was testing pomegranate extract, which I think has nitrites in it as well. You know, everyone's probably more familiar with beetroot juice. Funny story nitrate, about that.
But so someone doesn't hit us up.
Nitrate. Well, it turns into nitrite in the But anyway, doesn't matter. Nitric oxide. Via saliva, actually, the enzymes within your saliva. And the beetroot juice, right, which is how these, I think we touched on it with our podcast with Tim Podlicker. It was like, there's these, like, beetroot juice just became, it was this the initial supplement that was cheap and easy to find for the initial research on nitrates and nitric oxide. And, you know, and so then it just became beetroot juice. And then Emma's like, well, there's all these other like supplements that have like way higher concentrations and also maybe have the other beneficial compounds of like polyphenols or whatever. But beetroot juice.
Yeah. You know how they found beetroot juice? I believe this was Andy Jones and their group at Exeter. And the way that they found beetroot juice is they were testing some other supplement that was a red, like, chewy tablet, and they found these benefits of this red chewy tablet, and they looked at, I could be getting some of this wrong, but I remember this from a conference, and they found that there's nothing in this supplement that should be helping you except for this red coloring that was derived from beetroot juice. So then they went and looked into that, and now there's like a whole industry on selling beetroot juice.
Totally. Yeah.
I prescribe that to athletes. I wrote about it actually in an article. I just went back. I linked it to you in our notes. It's from 2018. I just quickly went back and looked. It's not that good. But I talked about
it. I remember that. Yeah.
Well, this was when there was that whole scandal in enduro racing, when some of the top enduro racers, I think it was Jared Graves, Richie Rude, like top dudes, they got pulled up for some drugs. Like, so it was a while ago that they got banned.
Yes, and you wrote that article like straight away about it.
And it got buried. No one ever saw it, which was unfortunate. It was like decent for banging it out in like a day. But I was like, well, you know, most people would think like, why is it really important to do doping for enduro anyway? So that's mostly what the article was about, but we successfully used beetroot juice with a lot of racers to like, whether it was like a placebo or it actually worked, I don't know, but we did use it. And the article kind of talked about where these compounds, what those compounds that they were taking did and why maybe beetroot juice is okay to use instead. So I don't know whether they actually took those, but I think the argument was that they found in these other supplements that they were already taking at the time. So I don't really know what happened with that. Kind of just everyone forgot.
Well, we'll get into that as well, because that's part of what's happening in Kenya. But continuing the line of a thought around the moral dilemma, it's like, so Emma's testing these, right? And then I get these ketone supplements, right? And so there's a, where were they from? Were they Oxford University, I think, came up with, there's like this article, this obscure article around Team Sky taking these ketone aids, like supplemental ketones. So I looked into it and I saw, so they had developed this means of like having this ketone dimer that whatever. So I was like, looked it up and I was like, well, I'm a biochemist, like I know how these compounds are derived. I was like, oh, well, 1,3-butanediol, that's metabolized into beta-hydroxybutyrate via alcohol dehydrogenase in the liver. I'll buy some of that. Just Sigma Aldrich, you know, chemical supplies company. So I buy it. It's like a chemical bottle of chemicals. I double check. I remember it was like put in some foods at one point in time as maybe, I don't know, like a,
make it disgusting.
A preservative of some sorts. No. So the FDA had approved it, whatever process that requires. But so it's like, okay, I can digest this. I can. So I got like my supervisor to sit there and watch me. I had a heart rate strap on. I think I had like a pulse oxometer, and like and so I just drink it. Right. You had to, it had one of those special bottle caps that you have to put a syringe in to pull the like,
so I remember this. That thing was disgusting,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, so then I had to buy like a special bottle top opener. Anyway, so I like drink these things, this pure like chemical out of like a brown chemical bottle with like all this like just biochemical like hazard awareness, like all the stuff. So I sit there and drink it, and I'm like measuring my ketones and they're going up and up and up, because beta hydroxybutyrate is the predominant ketone that circulates in your blood, which a ketone meter would measure. And like, okay. So I'm like, fine, right? So now let's see if this enhances performance. It didn't, but it did appear to put your, that's another podcast. And then I was like, what am I doing? And me and Emma had a discussion. We're like, are we just trying to find the means of doping without doping?
Yeah.
Like, are we just trying to move all the way up to this gray line? Or this arbitrary, like wiggly, zigzaggy line without crossing it. But like, I'm drinking this bottle of like chemicals.
Yeah.
So that I can hopefully metabolize ketones over carbohydrates, spare carbohydrates, and perform.
It's and a slippery then, slope, man.
So this is like the moral discussion versus a like regulatory rules and laws discussion, because what you might think perceived to be like a bit out of order is something that's not.
I just raised my hand because I didn't want you to change the topic, because I wanted to keep talking about this one. I'm testing this new method. Does it work?
It threw me off. I thought.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Wrong. Sorry about that. Well, that's what I mean when I do that. Everyone now knows our secret. Raise my hand on our online meeting. have you ever?
Might pop up on the Spotify video.
Yeah. Have you ever been around real doping? Besides, like your shelving of those ketones.
Nah, I don't think so.
Because I think I have. And there were these dudes that I used to race with. And they like, yeah, like they used to travel with this bag of pills and stuff. And they're like, yeah, it's supplements. And then they like told me where they get it, because I wanted to get some like caffeine, right? Because I was doing 24-hour races at the time. I had no idea what I was doing. But they told me about this website. And like, I didn't really know what they had or what was happening, what it was, or what you know, I had no idea. But I looked at the site that they got it on,
It's called purebulk.com. And I would like ordered some, it must be a site where people, it's like a supplier for protein supplements, for example. So you could, if you want to run your own protein supplement company, you can go to purebulk.com. I'm not even sure if it exists anymore. You go there, get your supplement, package it, and, you know, sell it, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, well, I want to get some caffeine because I'm doing these 24-hour races. And then I just ordered caffeine pills, like really strong. And
like no-dose style, like the, and more intense.
Yeah, like borderline should be illegal, especially because, like, it's powerful. And I was taking, like, there was no one to say, take this many. Like, that wasn't on the label. It just said, like, had a sticker that said caffeine. That's it. I probably would have taken way too many during these 24-hour races. Who knows what everyone else was doing? No idea. But I took those. And then, like, it wasn't till, like, a few years later where I thought, you know, I probably had too much caffeine at that race. I'm lucky I didn't get hurt. Right? This is what I'm thinking, just about caffeine. And then I think back, like, what were those other dudes taking? So the way I approach this now, like, doping and all that stuff with athletes, I really believe that's a slippery slope, because what you were doing with ketones, yes, it's legal, right? But yeah. What's next? It's like a gateway drug to performance. It's like, what are you going to have after ketones when you find out they don't work? Caffeine. Okay. Then what? So when I work with an athlete, I'm like, well, they're like, should I get a protein supplement? Like, nah, probably not. Should I get this supplement? Like, nah, probably not. Like, focus on your training. Like, that's number one. And then there's other things we could do. But I don't ever want to lead someone down this rabbit hole of chasing drugs.
Well, it's scary for me. Performance.
Yeah.
In a bottle or a capsule or whatever. And, you know, the years we spent researching this stuff was like, if you're really good, it doesn't work. And this is the heavy duty banned stuff. Like, if you're going to inject EPO, erythropoietin, which is the precursor hormone to stimulate red blood cell production, that works. Like, and it's dangerous because your blood can turn to treacle, you know, and it's completely unregulated. Well, it's illegal, right? So it's completely unregulated. Where are you getting it from? Like, it has the potential to severe, like, especially if you already have
atherosclerosis. Probably not many athletes have that, like, hardening of the arteries. Well, the main worry, and, like, this is why there are limits placed on drugs like that, like EPO, is you increase the red blood cell count in your plasma, and suddenly your blood's so thick that when you get dehydrated, it can't move through properly, and you have a heart attack and die. So that's, like, super dangerous.
Clotting, blood clotting doping becomes, like, yeah. So if you had a crash and maybe got a, like, some kind of internal bleeding, a brain hemorrhage, of even just a small, like, now you've got clotting of the brain, you can have an aneurysm. No one out there who's listening to this is shooting up EPO, but
I don't know, man. Sometimes I wonder how prevalent it is.
No way. This is, and so I've spoken to elite athlete, like full time, you know, getting paid the big dollars, and it is just, and we'll get into this part around the Kenyan issue. It is just not worth the risk to hunt for these performance gains when in the modern era, and this is in cycling as well, is like your whole reputation, and no team will touch you, no manager's going to touch you. It's like push every, and it costs a lot. So put all that money into a very intensive training camp with far more stringent controls around your training prescription and recovery, as opposed to like hard and fast, like out and out performance enhancing drugs, which is just culturally not accepted in sport. You know, like cycling, it was culturally accepted.
it's been written about, and there's documentaries on it, like during that 90s era. Like, there was no, it was just accepted, right? And so what's happened in the Kenyan doping crisis is that it's not actually the top tier. Like, sure, there are some top athletes that have been getting caught, very few, but it's this huge pool that sit under the, like, Olympic class world record holding athletes. And it is that, it's a perfect storm scenario where you have road racing, so road marathons, which, and it's you can only do a few a year if you're going to perform in the top 10, you know, in the prize money. If you want to perform optimally, you can only do maybe two or three a year. But there are hundreds, if not thousands, of races throughout the world that offer significant prize money and appearance fees.
What kind of cash are we talking about?
We're talking like, so if you're looking at the big races, we're talking like hundreds of thousands. And so you're going down to 20th for like 10, 15 grand, US.
That's cool.
And then if you're looking at a smaller race, you're looking at 10 grand for the win, 20,000, down to maybe they're only paying the fifth, but the fifth is getting 1,000 US. But they'll probably cover you to and from your training destination.
Yeah. And unless you're in New Zealand, then you might get like a spot prize.
You may. Yeah. Yeah, I actually got a spot prize last night. I forgot to tell you, Matt, at the local 5K for the Polynesian Spa.
Hotbox. Oh, cool. Can't wait to go.
Yeah, well, we should hit it after this. So now you have like the opportunity for thousands of runners to make significant money in Kenyan currency, right? So this is a low socioeconomic country where the male has to provide for a large family, often like brothers, sisters, father, mother, children, and $10,000 goes a really long way. And they're not trying to be the best in the world. They're not trying to go to the Olympics. They're trying to provide for their family. And so when a manager or a fellow training partner says, I take this, it makes you better. It's like, well, that's a no-brainer. Then from the testing side of things, WADA or the Integrity of Sport Unit and the Kenyan like Anti-Doping Association, they can't spread their resources that thin. They need to be intensely concentrated on the Olympic world record, like world class runners. And when in Kenyan road running, when you compete, like, so the scenario I've painted where like thousands of athletes can make tens of thousands of dollars, you have a scenario where if you look at, say, an 800 meter track runner or a pole vaulter, or even a 5,000 meter track runner, it's like if you're in the top 20 of Kenyans, you can probably make money. After that, you might get flow in there, you know, might get an appearance, you might get like, yeah, your accommodation, travel taken care of, but no one's paying you to run around to the track and come 25th.
Yeah.
And so like, it's very, the issue is very concentrated around Kenyan road running, where you just have the 50th fastest Kenyan marathoner through to the like 500th fastest Kenyan marathoner able to perform at an exceptionally high level and make money around the world. But like, who's going to test them and why?
Yeah, it's...
And so then as a manager, so like I can fly over to Kenya and be like, you know, create a team. And I go, I'm going to take 50% cut of all your prize money and appearance fees. And then I go around to all the race organizers. I go, yeah, you know, the race organizer rings. Well, yeah, I need a 215 guy and a sub 230 girl, and I want five of them. And like, I can get those for you. Yeah.
So as a manager, you don't care.
Seriously, I'm like, promoting it.
Yep, let me send them because I'll get my money. Who cares if they get caught? And they're like happy to do it as well.
And I'm like, as a manager, you go, well, there is a documentary, I don't know if it's on, where they went undercover with the managers and the coaches. It's like, yeah, oh, this is what I can get you. Like, it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it is easy. Yeah. I'm sure I could figure out a way to go on the dark web and order EPO. There's a guy locally, a runner.
Did he do that?
He did that.
Oh, wow.
And got banned for 4 years.
Wow. Dude, this is crazy because you sent me that link of the Anti-Doping Agency of Kenya. And there's a list of, there must be 30 or 40 people here. And it shows what they're banned for and how long they're banned for. It shows their name. And then there's like a PDF document next to each person where you can find details of the case.
Yeah, so I went through these, and what's really interesting is that there are these adverse analytical findings, which is, it's like, we've detected a substance that is potentially being put into your system unethically, or like outside the rules of the sport. But it could also have been appeared in your system ethically, right? So a lot of them are androgens or androgenic aids. So they stimulate testosterone production. Testosterone production helps with reduced body fat in women. It increases erythropoietin, so increases red blood cell, helps repair. As a anabolic, so anabolic means build, catabolic means breakdown, anabolic stimulation, so steroid, and helps you build and maintain muscle mass and reduce fat mass, and so you recover. And a woman has huge benefits to performance because you gain more male characteristics, which is, you know, males are faster than females. But like, have a look at some of them, and some of them are coming from these supplements. Like, one of them was like Con-Crete Super Muscle.
Sounds like something you get at 7-Eleven, like after you got your Slurpee and you're going to check out. You're like, what the heck is that? Con-Crete. Oh, a bit of that. Yeah. Sounds like one of those.
Yeah. Like, and one of them was like, massive heaps energy and stuff. Like, and so someone's like, I haven't been to Kenya. I don't know what the cultural context is there but I just can't imagine this random Kenyan runner being like, yeah, super boost heaps energy. Like, that's exactly what I need to, like, just on his own terms. I'm like,
dude,
I feel
you can
like
make up your own name. This is because this is what's been happening also with the synthetic cannabis.
Yeah.
Where like, the rules keep changing for the compounds that you can import. It's like, that's fine. I'll just get a new compound and someone mixes them. Maybe they get everything from pure bulk or they go straight to the distributor of these compounds, mix it up. Like, does it work? I think so. And, you know, sell it as your new name here with a cool package. And now you're just in sales, selling a thing that people are buying. It's crazy. There's a few docos that I've watched on synthetic cannabis and it's just blows my mind how people just try and get around these regulations.
Yeah, that
they don't really know what it is.
Or whatever.
Yeah. It's
created them.
I just Googled one of these guys that he's on the list. And I think this was the guy that had the lifetime ban. He's got lifetime ban for
that was
presence of prohibited substance, methylprednisolone.
Methylprednisolone.
Okay, never heard of that word, but he was banned for life. In 2019, I searched him. He's like 7th, 3rd, 5th, 8th at like, I don't know, a 10K in the Netherlands. Like 3rd, 6th, 22nd at a Kilimanjaro race. It's like, and it also shows their prize money on this website. How much prize money they've made for all these races. And we're not talking huge sums.
What are we looking at?
$525, $130, $715 for first at a marathon in the Netherlands as well in 2011. So in today's dollars, like $5,000.
So, in Kenya, like 20 grand.
Yeah, they'll probably go a long way. But now he's banned forever. So I can see how
be,
it's like...
You know what would be super big problem? To talk to those guys. Yeah. Like, do you care? Or do you? Did you achieve what you needed to financially to support your family?
That's like Oprah Winfrey level, like, interviews.
Well, but you know, Matt, so these guys are, whether they know or don't know, because there was another guy last year, the World Athletics put a ruling on shoe height, Matt. So your cheetah shoes, as you like to refer to them, they are actually cheetah shoes. If you go above 40 millimeters in stack height, you are, your shoe's deemed to be illegal. This wow. Adidas-sponsored runner ran in the Adidas Prime X, which is 50 mils. He won the race and got subsequently disqualified, forfeiting all his prize money. He said he had no idea. His manager or coach told him to wear these shoes. And then there's like the gray discussion around like, well, because you have to show your shoes as an elite runner to the like the event organizers or World Athletic judge or official, whatever, to show like, these are the shoes I'm going to wear. You got to write it down and show them. And then he's like turned out with different shoes. It's like, okay, whatever. But it really appeared like he had no idea, right? Whether he had, like he had no idea, right? But he ends up, someone's told him to wear these shoes. He's wearing them. He's sponsored. And he's just being disqualified. It's not like a lifetime ban or anything, because it's, I don't know why.
It'd still be really annoying because someone put, that's suddenly that's on the internet, right? Like, this guy's a cheater. He wore 40 mil shoes. Like, oh my God, does it really matter?
But,
well, I guess it does.
So someone's told, and it's like these supplements, which have some form of androgen. Typically, it was what, like, I went through that list of about 30 odd, besides like some amphetamines in like one of the boxes, which could have just been a good night out. The athletes are almost entirely around androgens or anabolic, some form of anabolic steroid or testosterone like enhancer. And reading through, so the adverse analytical finding is like, yeah, maybe you got this through eating like 20 kgs of meat every day or whatever, you know. And a lot of them just admit to this what happened. They don't bother trying to fight the reason it was in, but they can argue, I guess, the intent. Because that's part of the ruling of like a lifetime ban, 2 year, 4 year, backdated and stuff. So like one of these guys had a real issue in his, I can't remember, knee. Let's just say knee. I'm making it up, but it's somewhere in his leg. So he went to a clinic, health clinic, I think they're called in Kenya, and got an injection. He didn't ask what was in it. He didn't like. He didn't ask for a TUE. He didn't apply for anything, and subsequently, that health clinic was shut down because it was running unsanctioned, and he's ended up with like testosterone, nandrolone in his system. And so he can, whether he did it on purpose, whether he didn't, he can fight for the intent of it being in there and the reason for it being in there, and then accepting the ban and moving on. Like, was he doping? I don't, what, like, whatever, it was there, so he's banned. Yeah. And so this is just reoccurring, and then there's one with the, yeah, there's this guy with all the supplements, same kind of androgenic aid in there, and it's like, this is,
yeah, it's
this
crazy.
Is now a crisis.
You could insert case X here, right? As like we're talking about this, I'm thinking, oh yeah, Philippe Merhega in 2004, riding for Specialized, he was unstoppable. EPO, right? I remember Matthias Flückiger just in 2022. He suddenly disappeared because this substance was detected. He claims innocence. Everyone always seems
really?
To like,
I didn't say that.
Yeah. I just pulled up the article here. And he's claiming innocence, but that just sounds like such a difficult thing to go through. Like the struggles that you go through as an athlete, like you're looking, let's say you're looking at your training program, you got two sets of intervals today and like a 6-hour ride tomorrow. And then in the back of your mind, you're thinking about this ongoing doping case that everyone thinks you're guilty, right? Can you imagine the pressures of that as like a, just a human being? And like, maybe you did it, maybe you didn't, but it doesn't matter because those pressures must be insane. You're like, how are you going to get through a 6-hour ride with that feeling?
Yeah. Yeah. And so a lot of the rulings that have been dealt have been on, I can't remember what the exact wording is, but it's like, as an elite athlete, you have to know what is being put into your body, and ignorance isn't a defense. It's just time and time again, it's like, oh, I didn't know, you know, my coach and my doctor and my team doc and like whatever says that I should take this. So I did. Like, it, that's on you. This is like, you are your business. You are, yeah, you, like your what you eat and drink is on you, knowing the repercussions of that. But also, Matt, can you imagine having a niggle? The Olympics are coming up. You've had a bit of a down season the year before, but you're in the team. You know you've been selected. You have to, like, a top 10 is $100,000 national governing body bonus for the next Olympic cycle per year. You have a sponsorship bonus of $200,000, top 10, and then you've got a set of those intervals you set the other day, right? You just bump them up to 12 from 10. 10 by sprints into tempo, followed by a 6-hour ride, followed by a 3-day stage tour. And you go, I just need a little something. Like, I'm getting run down. My knee is killing me. Like, and then your mate says, I took, you know, a cortisol injection. It was all good. Like, you're out of competition. I was testing, you know, like, it's not even bad. It's not even whatever. Or it's like, take super boost, heaps of energy. And,
got a 7-Eleven.
And you feel better. And then it's like, because you just put this in context of like being at, Amazon, whatever, big corporation, and you got to like speeding. It's like, what, you know, what are the scenarios? Are you like totally morally fine with breaking the law to do better? What kind of law is it? You know, it's a tough one.
Yeah, it's tough. I think like the easiest thing is to not get into it, but I see like these huge pressures, which is insane. I'm glad I don't have to deal with those. But it's also interesting to me, the testing that happens, or shall I say, the lack thereof.
Yeah, totally.
Because if you were like, I think, in my opinion, the people that have the biggest incentive to cheat are age groupers that are like pretty good. And the only reason they're doing their sport is because of the ego, right? Which is fine. Like, ego, that's why we most
of us do it. Broad generalization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like, you might want to impress your friends, you might want to impress your family, you might want to just say that you won this race or whatever in your age group. You got like pretty limited time to train. You're already at your max. You already don't sleep enough. Like, well, what else can I do? And I'd say that's a pretty big incentive to cheat. And there's not much testing going on. Like, if we think about
it, no, it's the same as the guys who are, or girls, but to a lesser extent, because the money's like nowhere near as much. But in cycling, you've got, say, your Pogacar's, Tadej Pogacar, Primo Roglic, like Tom Dumoulin, like those guys are up front. They're under so much scrutiny. And they're winning races from a young age. That
they're good, they're genetically gifted. But then you have the domestiques who, like, they might be signing 1 year contracts, not 5 year contracts. And that, like, they're going from a job to unemployed. It's not like you don't win the tour or you're, like, not on the podium. So you're just, you might not get as much next year, or you might not get a ride on the best team. You might be leader, or you might turn into a domestic for a lead out, like, a secondary, for the secondary tours. You're still top dog, really. But then the guy's trying to hold their position in the bunch or on the pro tour, they're not under as much doping control because they're not, you know, they're not getting post-race doping. Typically that's, so what I've been involved with when I've been at events or something for elite events, for elite triathlons typically, or some cycling, is like they'll take the podium, you know, and then they might take a random person in the bunch. And typically it's not random, it's someone they think is, something I've had word of in the inner circles. And so, but there's still, what's a pro tour bunch, like 200 odd? Like, so you can test 200 people every single day for 3 weeks in the tour and out of competition. So no.
Most high level athletes don't even get tested. Like, there's always testing happening at all these big events, but most of them are not getting tested, which is crazy. I just asked, we've been talking about ChatGPT a lot. Yeah. If no one's on OpenAI.com,
I think the world is disgusting about it.
So I'm just asking ChatGPT what it's like about what's the most common performance enhancing drug. And I asked it if age group athletes are incentivized to use these. And it does say, yeah, because of college scholarships or professional contracts. So I'm like, think you're going for a potential professional contract. But it's not limited to any specific age group, it says. Dude, can we talk about, like, how awesome ChatGPT has been?
Nah, it's not in the con. When we're talking about a dope, there's a different topic.
All right, what else do you have to say about doping then?
Matt just really wants to date ChatGPT.
Yeah, I got nothing else to say about doping, to be honest. Like, I think it's exhausted itself. I think,
Well, what light did you want to shed on the situation in terms of, like, we haven't discussed it before, but what is the, like, the takeaway in terms of the lay of the land of, like, do you think everyone's out there doping? What's the incentives? And where do you think is the problem, if there is one?
What do I think is the problem? I just think the problem,
like,
is,
like, can you watch the Olympics without
I was about to say my problem, actually. I think the problem is that there's always people that are looking for a shortcut. And sport is no different. Like, sport is no different from any other kind of profession or from any other endeavor where you're already putting everything into it that you can't put anything else. There's nothing more in your control that you can do to be better. There's a lot of people that are doing that, but there are some of those are looking for this potential edge. So you combine that with the other problem that it's a real gray line of what is cheating and what isn't cheating. Yes, there are some things that are clearly labeled as illegal, but when you find yourself on this gray line, that's a slippery slope, and you're also among the small list of people that are potentially incentivized to look for that edge, I think that's the problem. And I would say that there are more of those than we know of. And I would also say that more of them are not at the top.
Yeah.
Than there are ones at the top.
So from my, I guess, obviously not experience in doping, but talking
just talking with coaches and managers and scientists is that it's exactly what you're saying, but as someone like who understands the performance enhancing or metabolic aspects and biochemical stimulating, like the part, all the pathways of these drugs or supplements or things, is that they often don't work. Like that, yeah, if you're taking EPO, that's going to work, but you're probably going to get caught. But then if you're existing in that gray area and you're trying to take this supplement or you're trying to take a really low dose of something, it's like if you already had good testosterone, then you are getting no benefit from this. If you already maximized your VO2 max and oxygen carrying capacity, nitrates aren't going to help you. Yeah, you know, like they may reduce your heart rate, or if you take a ketone supplement and you increase your ketones, you may still have the same metabolic rate, you know, and some things may allow you to be appetite suppressant and lose weight, but that doesn't mean you didn't lose muscle mass. Like it just, yeah, there's a gray area, and some people, maybe they do find something that really works for them. But a lot of the times, I don't think that when I'm watching the Olympics, that the winner was just out and out doping, and that's the reason they beat everyone. Not these days. Not with the, no, yeah.
What do you think about the argument that cycling, I believe this is the case, that like race times are as good or close or better, let's say up Alpe d'Huez. And I don't know what the record is. It might be Miguel Indurain or
Lance or
something like that. But
or something.
Either way, like whether the sometimes are closer or better now than they were, right? And we look back to the old days, and that was a time when doping was obvious. Like now we know, like they were doping, and that's why they're going so fast. But now, like obviously you don't think that the top person is doping. How are they as good as the people that were doping?
What site? Is your computer faster than it was then? Like, is your fridge more efficient? Can we use less water in our washing machines? I think things get optimized when they need to be, right? It's not like cycling just sat still and was like, well, this is the limit of our performance. It's like, well, there's more money in the sport. Bikes have to be better. Power distribution from the pedal to the rear hub has to be more efficient than it was 15 years ago. You know, cooling strategies, fueling strategies, like we're not talking about massive differences compared to someone who's like, I ride an alloy frame with like fully spoked wheels, not even carbon, and I'm not even wearing a helmet and my jersey's baggy and I don't need to really worry about like pre-cooling,
dude, or low socks as well. Low socks.
Probably didn't even shave the legs. Probably didn't even shave their arms. Like, I take EPO and testosterone. Like, why do I
need a better bike if I just take EPO? It's funny because actually people look at it.
And team dynamics, like how fast. Like, yeah, they try and compare these like individual points in time. And it's like, yeah. What do you expect to happen? Are we only allowed to be slower? Is the human potential only allowed to decrease otherwise, unless it's doping? Otherwise,
well,
like
I was actually going to say, it's down to like better training techniques is actually what I was going to say. I was going to basically put it at that because, you know, some things like VO2 max, obviously, like there are huge problems. We talk about this in the VO2 Max Secrets Revealed episode,
we talked about the problems with like the VO2 max, like the oxygen sensors and CO2 sensors in these VO2 max measuring devices. And but like VO2 max records stand from years ago, right?
Yeah, human potential is like, for the most part, has a ceiling.
Yeah. So that's not affected by the efficiency of your drivetrain, right? That's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. So maybe we are getting worse, right? Because if bikes are that much better, for example, and shoes are that much better, we should be blowing the doors off these old measurements, including VO2 max or a peak power in a graded exercise test. Right, we should be blowing it out the doors just because everything's better. We're way smarter, we're way better, but also maybe less doped up. Or maybe the real answer to like getting a high VO2 max and really high performance and still riding fast with a 10 speed bike with down tube shifters is you just ride hard every day, right? Maybe that is the ultimate answer. And you know, obviously you're going to lose some people because they just can't recover. And it's just like really high rate of attrition. But if everyone does it, you're going to end up with some insane specimens. Right. So maybe that is the way. Right. But some people just can't handle it. They're sure, the ones that stick around now.
You have freaks too. And maybe sports over the years start drawing in a higher concentration of the freaks, because like now, like with social media and the, I guess the access to worldwide marketing really enhances the earning potential of the freaks, right? The dude who can push 400 watts for an hour every single day, you know, like as opposed to the one who can do it for a few days but then needs an easy day. And that you, like, there are people who are like, I'm way taller than you, Matt. That's just genetics. It's so someone is going to be someone, their phenotype is just going to fit cycling, or it's going to fit. Eliud Kipchoge fits running. It's just incredible. And then maybe we've enhanced, like mental capacity or whatever. There's a lot on it, but to say doping and some of the arguments I see are just so, they're so annoying and how narrow the focus of like a singular performance is. But it's like, I won't give examples, but people are like, probably thinking like, what about this? That has to be. And
do you think the Olympic champion in sport X, maybe they're not doping as you believe, but do you think that they have the perfect elixir and mix of things that they're taking on a daily basis to improve their recovery, improve their performance, improve their body mass?
No.
To decrease their fat mass. You don't think that they have a nice elixir of things that you don't have, that you don't
think. What do you mean by, I think they have the perfect world. Their world has been perfected into the scenario of optimal performance. Right. So with Lance, he was like from a broken home and he was, but he just was really good. So he was like winning all these triathlons. And then he was able to surround himself in a world that optimized his performance. Michele Ferrari, the US postal team being centered around him, Trek bikes, making stuff for, like Galien Rupp being fathered by Alberto Salazar and having Nike's backing from high school. Like, I just think they find the Norwegians in triathlon. Like, how often? Yeah.
It's interesting because we disagree. And because I think they do have that perfect elixir of things that you might not think to take yourself.
No, because you just imagine if your wife starts cheating on you. Like, if that's just how you're still going to win an Olympic gold medal if that happened to the months leading up to it, or and then you file for divorce and then you're in this like crazy court case where she's trying to take the kids from you because you're never at home because you're always training.
I used to blow up in races all the time. We talked about this before. And one of the things that I felt, like the sensation that I got, was in my throat. And it felt like what was happening in my throat was that there was this flap inside my trachea that came out, right? And so it felt like suddenly now, after I went hard, I had this flap that's stopping the airflow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and this was in the time where I had experienced like chronic fatigue and like nothing was going right. And I was trying so hard. So I told this to the doctor and he goes, "Oh, I just said that. That's all I said." And he's like, "Oh, you have exercise induced asthma." Just like that. He's like, "I'll write you a prescription for this." So he gave me the prescription. And I think it was for Claritin, which is like an antihistamine. So he's like, "This helps with sports induced asthma," is what he said. Now, I asked ChatGPT just now, what's the prevalence of asthma in elite sports? And in some sports, there are more athletes with asthma, right? Using an inhaler, obviously, because you need to do that if you have asthma. There are more in sport X than there are in the general population. Right. So, okay. That means that you can go to your doctor and be like, "This is what happens." You get the prescription, right? Because you have asthma. So now what you're able to do is you're able to take an inhaler, which opens up your airways potentially. Well, obviously, like opening up your airways is not your biggest concern, because the real concern is cellular, which, you know, people who take these inhalers maybe overlook when they don't actually have asthma. But that's how easy it is. And you see a lot of inhalers. If you watch the start of an elite race, you're going to see a lot of inhalers. I don't think everyone actually has asthma. I think it's part of that perfect tonic of the things that they use to be at their best performance. And the fact that they're legal means it's not doping.
Yeah.
So maybe it's more of an anecdote than it is like an argument, but yeah, that is my argument against.
Yeah, but like you said, and like I said earlier, when they may be taking all these gray area things, but where's the scientific literature saying that an inhaler 100% enhances like oxygen transportation across like the alveoli into the bloodstream? And absorption into hemoglobin, dissociation into myoglobin within the muscle cell for oxidative respiration. I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing that it can reduce restriction in airways for, you know, a greater airflow. But like we know that that's not the restriction of oxygen transportation.
No, but it is the perfect ingredient for part of an elixir of performance enhancing things that someone might take.
Okay, Matt, my computer's about to go flat. I didn't plug it in. So let's just leave it there.
Sounds good.
See ya. Bye, Matt. Until next time. Catch you later.